Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am Clayton Ashley.
I am Matthew O'Chan.
Welcome.
Thanks. You're welcoming me.
It's nice to see you. Welcome. It's episode 20 of Star Trek Enterprise. I couldn't believe that, honestly.
I can't believe we're already here. We must be close to the end of season one. Nope. Yeah.
It's like four more episodes, right?
There are six back in the old... more episodes.
26 episodes.
It's a 26 episode season.
But this one's Oasis and it aired April 3rd, 2002.
That's right.
A heady time.
Was it?
Yeah, it's been interesting because this has been the rare week where, at least for some points of it, it was more enjoyable to be in 2025 than 2002, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, big ups to the electorate of the city of New York, and especially the People's Republic of Astoria, Queens.
Yeah, thanks for giving me hope.
Thanks for giving me a little bit of, a soupçon of hope about my boy, Zoran. Isn't that nice?
Because I guess it's nice. I don't know if he specifically directly mentioned that, but this is a podcast produced and hosted and edited in the People's Republic of Astoria.
That's correct. I feel like the Zoran stuff isn't completely off topic because it is on some level. Right. Closing the book, hopefully, fingers crossed, on sort of the Islamophobic politic of the last 24 years. It started big time with 9/11, like the era of culture in which is this podcast's purview is the beginning of the long 2001, and it could be the end.
It could be. I think we should definitely link to that Spencer.
Yeah, there's a great article. Piece by Spencer Ackerman and his great newsletter Forever Wars, just entitled "This is the beginning of the end of the 9/11 era." There's a big smiling photo of our boy. We should stick it in the show notes because I thought it was really prescient and interesting to read and made me feel nice.
Cathartic in some ways too.
Yeah.
To have it laid down that way. And yeah, it's because you're totally right about how it, especially after reading this, it's like, oh, wow, this is interesting that we started this podcast in this era. And maybe one of the first things that has happened to make it feel like it's not the end of that era is that's prescient.
We're all gonna go pray at the Ground Zero Mosque together.
Can't wait. So I'll take us back though to April 3rd.
I'm casting my mind back
since that's the point of the episode. This podcast, and we'll just start with some music. J-Lo still thinks it ain't funny.
I think if she just maybe thought about it in a different way, I think she's just having a hard time conceiving of a way it could be funny. And I just implore her to maybe try to turn that frown upside down.
Yeah.
J-Lo, if you're listening, and I know you are.
If you're just sitting on the sidelines laughing, saying, ain't it funny, you're not doing anything. Get in there and do something about it.
Yeah. 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 Get off your duff, J-Lo.
And we've got What's Love, Fat Joe and Ashanti. Mm-hmm. I would say more if I was familiar with that track, but I'm unfortunately not.
It's an all right track. It's pretty good.
And in the end, you know, Still There, Foolish, also by Ashanti. Mm-hmm. The first one here that popped off to me and like, oh, have we even talked about this? Is number 5, NSYNC's Girlfriend.
Oh, we haven't really talked about that one.
Or even just like NSYNC. This is kind of like, this is the end-ish of the era of those 90s boy bands, but they're still going into 2002. It's like...
yeah. What era of NSYNC is that? Oh, it's from... oh, yeah. It's the third single off their fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Yeah, this is the beginning of the end for the boys, I think. It is the final studio album of NSYNC. Is it the final single?
It's the final... I didn't actually check that, but I knew it was the last album.
Yeah.
So looking at it on YouTube...
It is the last single from the last NSYNC album.
I think if you want to gain any, like... direct from the people, from the Vox, what they think about music, it's YouTube comments on a music video.
Oh yeah.
And everyone loves JC. That's what I got from the comment
section. People are big on JC Chazé.
Wish he had a bigger solo career and it wasn't Timberlake who really took off.
Timberlake does seem like a weird creep.
Yeah,
I'll say.
So
sorry,
I
Justin, if
them.
You're listening, I know you are.
I'm sad for JC.
I'm sad for JC Chazay, who I know is listening as well. Which one is? Oh, this song. I pulled it up. It's them like trying to do like a contemporary hip hop number.
I was gonna say it's a bit more R&B, a bit more not quite as boy band.
They're all like in beanies that make it look like they're wearing do-rags, which I think is funny.
It's very the music video is kind of cool, but they look extremely dorky.
Yeah, it looks very much like they're at the Race Wars from Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Except I think it looked a little 1950s. I don't know if I was just reading that wrong. Like they're doing what time era is it?
Yeah, it's a little. They're out of time. They're on hot rods. I think is what's causing you to think that they're in the 50s.
Not like muscle drifting cars that Fast and Furious likes to promote.
Yeah, there's an incredible bit where like music videos used to be like, oh, here's a couple of scenes and we're flashing back and forth between them. One of the scenes is a couple of guys rolling a big tire around and there's just a lady inside of it.
Seems like fun. You never done that?
God, I can't believe we didn't talk about this. This is a real like, please, my boy band is very sick.
Yeah.
This is a Pharrell track, I believe, as well.
That was also noted in the comments, actually. Yes.
The comments are all over it.
He's still got some chops in the production.
JC's voice is timeless. He is smoothness all the way.
JC fans.
He is so underrated. JC's voice is so deep and raspy. Has a like a rock love it feel. Why does JC look like he's having a genuinely good time? Like no camera, summer nights, young love fun.
That's our JC.
What is going on in... This is all 5 years ago, all these comments?
Oh, that's interesting. Maybe he was on something.
Maybe he must
have got him in the news again.
This song will never go out of style 2024. I always thought JC was the cutest. No, JC doesn't look like he's performing. He's having a good time. JC will forever be my favorite. That voice so smooth. Also, I still love this song. I love JC voice so much. This is so, I wish JC would have continued to make music too.
It's incredible. I don't know what the
JC career should have definitely taken off like Justin's. His voice was amazing as well.
Probably a better actor too, you know.
Yeah.
I'll bet.
Yeah. How lucky this girl with JC. Him singing like that with her voice, that voice in her ear. OMG. JC is the sexiest and he is the best singer to me. I'm not even like digging through these. These are just like the comments in order.
It was like,
sorry.
Quickly.
Yeah.
I closed the window. Where the NSYNC people are at. And it's in JC's beautiful chords.
Dulcet tones.
Okay, we got a Nickelback. We got Blurry, of course. Puddle of Mud. They're still there. I looked for new stuff, and these are probably going to like shoot up the charts here eventually in the next couple of weeks. But Cher has got Song for the Lonely.
Oh, good song. Good
and one. Alicia Keys has got How Come You Don't Call Me.
I don't remember that one.
I didn't either, but I did remember Song for the Lonely.
Song for the Lonely is where she's blonde in the video and she's just in a black background. She's looking at you and I'm lonely and I'm listening to my friend Cher.
We have not much on television.
Okay.
It's really interesting for only the ratings because, oh boy. Of course, My Wife and Kids, 60 Minutes, 2. Ed, dominating.
I just, they got it. We got to call it something else. 61 Minutes. 62 minutes.
Thing though, those are like the top three. And then we have like the bottom rung has been our That 80s Show, Enterprise, and Dawson's Creek. The vile, villainous Dawson's Creek.
The bastards.
That 80s show is kind of, I'm not going to say handily, but it's beating Enterprise this week, which is pretty bad.
That's so sad for us.
And Enterprise is just barely ahead of Dawson's Creek. So. For everyone out there who's really invested in these TV ratings from over two decades ago.
I mean, I'm fascinated by them in as much as it seems like Enterprise could not get fucking canceled.
True. Yeah.
They're just like, it's Star Trek. We cannot, like, this is too lucrative to have a Star Trek on the air, I guess.
They're really curious what because this was, again, back with, you know, they knew they could syndicate it forever afterwards. So the whole television economics are very different than now. Mm-hmm. But if this was a streaming show, it would have always been canceled.
Yeah, they would have every character would have died on screen screaming.
episode 12. News?
News?
Actually, I'll save news because there's not much. Movies is where the action's at because we actually got some new stuff that people might remember.
Yeah.
Down at number 10, Death to Smoochie.
Okay.
Stacked cast. I mean, movie, obviously, Robin Williams,
a movie
you probably all remember.
I recall I saw in theaters and loved.
So
it's exactly the right age to love, like, black comedy, you know?
So YouTube, once again, the comments are pretty universally, what an underrated movie. Underrated. It's so underrated. Mm-hmm. Dark comedy, but underrated. So I the critics didn't like it at the time.
They no, because the movie's bad, I think, is why.
Trashed by Ebert. said it was like the worst movie of the year and a lot of others. It bombed at the box office, so yeah. I don't know if crowds liked it either. But everybody nowadays, like the reviews are, of more recent reviews are shockingly high. This is now like a hidden gem.
Yeah.
So Robin Williams is Rainbow Randall, a like kids entertainment guy who is a piece of shit.
Yep.
And he's down on, he's like kicked out, he's done. And then this new guy,
I think there's a scandal.
There's a scandal that specifically gets him done, but he was already like a shitty guy as the character, I guess.
Yes.
Anyway, Edward Norton is the new like replacement as a, you know, Barney stand-in called Smoochie. And then
he's like a real aw shucks kind of guy.
And, you know, okay, we got Edward Norton. We also got Catherine Keener. We got John Stewart. Is there?
John Stewart.
And Danny DeVito starring and directing.
And directing. Mm-hmm.
Interesting to me. I've never seen it.
No, it's pretty good. There's also Harvey Fierstein's in there.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Michael Rispoli shows up, a guy I just always love to see. Who you might recognize Michael Rispoli as. Oh, God, what's he in? He's in a ton of stuff. You'll just recognize him. It's a big Italian gentleman. He's on, Jackie Aprile on The Sopranos.
There we go. Okay. Yep.
But he's great. I always love him, but he's like a boxer who's like a little punchy. And he plays, and he gets a job as a Smoochie's brother, Moochie, if I recall correctly. It's just, I have an insane recall about this movie that I've seen, I think, twice.
Yeah,
but I recall liking it. It's like a really, it's like one of those movies that just has like a bad attitude. It's like maybe
it seems
a little
deeply cynical,
maybe a little evil, maybe a little very cynical film. That when I was 16, I was like, this is how the world is, man. And I was,
yeah,
I guess I was right.
It's a Smoochie. Yeah, you were ahead of your time. You were,
and I just had,
it.
I had like such a nuclear crush on Catherine Keener at the time. I mean, I still do, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being John Malkovich is already, it was out for 2 years. Yeah. I had like such a crazy crush on her and still do. Catherine Keener. We love her, folks.
I definitely have not, I haven't seen this and I never had an intention to. It's funny that maybe I'll catch up on it. There's a movie at the top of the list I am absolutely like watching as soon as I can. We'll get to that. But
ooh,
this one, it's cynical, but then people say, based on the trailer, it is the one thing that made me curious about it, is it also seems like almost whimsical. Like the style of it is almost like goofy and silly as much as it's like a dark cynical comedy.
That's DeVito,
which is interesting.
That's DeVito's style to me. Who I do think is actually a pretty okay director. And I wish he'd get back to it. I guess he's pretty old.
So everything else between 10 and 5 were stuff we've talked about, but number 5 is Clock Stoppers, a Nickelodeon movie and a movie I actually saw that has a bizarre catchphrase, freeze the future.
Clock
it doesn't make sense.
Stoppers.
Clock Stoppers. So
I feel like
this isn't
I feel like I recall seeing posters for this.
Yeah, I feel like it's a lot of young people that I don't really know that well, but some interesting Star Trek connections.
Oh.
Because it was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Who was it now?
And it was written by Rob Hedden, which of course you remember is the director of Enterprise Episode Fusion and also Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes New York.
Oh, that's right. We talked about him.
It was very funny to me that this has had not one, but two connections.
Yeah.
Two directors of Enterprise.
It's so funny.
Came together to make this Nickelodeon teen movie.
Yeah, I feel like, you know what? I'm looking at images from it now, and I remember the preview where there's like water everywhere. And a girlie walks up and she parts it like curtains.
So this is the thing is, I saw this movie because I'm sure as a kid, I thought the trailer and the time freezing stuff looked cool. And it's interesting, it's a 2002 movie that a lot of that time freeze effects kind of hold up.
Ooh.
Strangely. And that's like its best, the best thing it has going for it, basically, is that they tried and did a pretty good job of doing some neato, like, time is moving so slow because we're moving so fast. And that's, like, the point of the movie. He has a watch that lets him kind of stop time. It's not good. It's not a good movie and not worth tracking down. Not even in a, like, so bad it's good way. It's just extraordinarily mediocre, according to both critics at the time and more modern people have gone back to look at it.
Yeah, I just feel like those Nickelodeon movies, I feel like, were pretty low effort.
Yeah, I think it cost $25 million and earned about $38. So
good for them. I'd love to see a return on investment. You know me. I'd
love to see.
I'm huge on that.
It's good for Frakes' career. So. number three was a baseball movie.
Which one?
The Rookie with Dennis Quaid.
Sure. Is that the one? It's the true story based on the old guy that goes back and pitches for, I want to say, Tampa Bay.
I feel like the trailer didn't get into the team he pitched for. Mm-hmm.
But he old and then he go pitch.
I honestly, from the trailer, thought it was Texas.
Maybe.
Just like on the vibes.
Mm.
But who knows? I mean, people who watched it would know. It's that sports movie. It literally, I was like, this reminds me of Remember the Titans. And then in the trailer, it's like, for the people who brought you, Remember the Titans.
Well,
that inspiring sports story. It's a genre that, I don't know, maybe we haven't seen a lot of lately, now that I think about it. I mean, I'm not like the direct target for it, but it doesn't feel like as popular of a genre now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So the guy's from Texas, but he did pitch for the Rays. At the time, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Oh.
They based took on out the true devil? Story of James. They took out the devil because it's bad. Well, it was they were convinced it was so the thing was the Devil Rays were always bad, mm-hmm. and people became convinced it was a curse.
Okay.
And also, I think local evangelical groups did not like it. And I think they got new ownership, and they changed it, and they wanted a brand refresh because they were just basically always bad. And now they're the Rays, and it does kind of look, their new logo did look kind of like a little angelic, because now they were referring to like rays of sunshine. They went from like the devil to the angel.
Interesting.
It's a little
rays of light. What the?
It's a little evangelical coded for my taste.
Oh, and the Devil Rays logo was cool.
The Devil Rays logo was so cool. It had like the gradient.
Yeah.
Those old Devil Rays jerseys rip. They're so good. Bring
this
back.
Has been Maddie's baseball minute.
This has been Maddie's baseball uniform minute.
So we have one more movie to talk about.
I'm rubbing my hands together like
it's a good one.
Oh, okay.
At number one. Panic Room.
Oh yeah, that's Fincher, right?
Yep, we got a Fincher movie.
The Finch man himself.
I knew it was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, what was this movie about? I think it probably scared me just the name as a kid. But I watched the trailer and it's like, oh yeah, Jodie Foster. And it's like, wait, Forest Whitaker?
Yeah, young Kristen Stewart.
Jared Leto, directed by David Fincher? Yes. Like, this is great.
I've never seen it.
Hell yeah, okay.
Maybe
this is a bonus episode.
Maybe a bonus.
A good movie.
Because we got to alternate back after
right.
watching, I don't know if it'll be up yet, but our next... The bonus episode
bonus.
That is coming up closest to this episode is us watching the 9/11 West Wing bottle episode, which caused me to have a seizure on air, I think. It gave me a sort of brain issue.
Star Trek Enterprise has been low quality television, but it's not actually made me pause it and stand up and just in frustration.
Yeah, I've not spent an entire, literally, we recorded that episode the day of the primaries here.
Yes.
And then later that night at like 11 p.m., we all had the same idea at the same time to go to the bar near our house. And I saw you at the bar. And then I was later that night walking home from the bar after like experiencing joy in my community.
Yeah.
And spent the entire walk home from the bar. It's like only like 10 minutes. But the entire walk home from the bar loudly telling my wife about this West Wing episode and how mad I was about it. Which like I've never yelled at her about a bad Enterprise episode.
Yeah, it doesn't offend you in its badness. It's just like,
Enterprise has never been. It's not evil. It's not.
We'll put a pin in that. It will get evil a little bit.
Oh,
later.
I'm saying the first season of Enterprise not evil. This episode's not evil.
No.
Yeah.
The times they were kind of evil, which will actually get us back a little bit to the conversation as it reminded me. Okay. Yep. So I guess this isn't so evil, but Vanilla Coke is sort of announced, which I saw that like
pretty evil stuff, Clayton.
I actually like Vanilla Coke.
No, Vanilla Coke's good. The Coca-Cola Corporation, obviously evil.
Yes, evil.
They killed that lady. they assassinated somebody.
Allegedly.
Big news: arrested Abu Zubaydah.
Zubaydah, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The quote from Ari Fleischer, press spokesman, whatever, said: "Threats remain. Al Qaeda has many tentacles, but one of them has been cut off." There's like that. I felt like it was a very succinct encapsulation of an ongoing thing in this era of like we found the number two of Al Qaeda.
Yeah.
There's a new number two. We got him. Oh, we got number three. Now they're number one now because it's.
They loved to do that every couple months to be like, "There's a new number two, and we've killed him."
Yeah, and also with this kind of language of like, "We cut off the head of Al Qaeda, but it has tentacles. We're gonna stop the axis of evil." It's very like action movie almost. It's ridiculous, and they tried to make this sound like another big thing.
Yeah,
at the time. Like they burst into his compound with documents and plans everywhere. Like that was the kind of press announcement that style. Like episode of 24, we just barely in the nick of time. And also really ominous that he was transported to an undisclosed site for interrogation. I was like, they just said that in the newspaper, I guess. Wow,
sure did.
But finally, I guess this was evil at the time a little bit, but now is funny to think about in retrospect, because somebody named Andrew Cuomo, April 3rd, he was flying to Israel because he's thinking about running for governor, and that was an important pit stop on running for the governor of New York.
That's interesting. Who's Andrew Cuomo?
I feel like he used to be in the White House, but that was like decades ago.
Yeah, he was like the HUD secretary or something. That's crazy.
It is.
I don't like that.
Because he did it because the other candidate in the primary had just done it like a few weeks earlier. And it was like, especially after, as you mentioned, we recently watched that 2001 era episode of The West Wing that was like right after like barely a month. And then this week, after being like so immersed in thinking about that time and what it was like in that episode, also especially dealing with a lot of animosity towards Muslims, this week was such that made this week even more of a whiplash. That made this feel even more like, wow.
We really moved on so much.
There is still that kind of bullshit.
Yeah. I mean,
but
it's,
maybe it doesn't matter quite as much.
Maybe it doesn't matter.
Or it can be fought back.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, that was the primary that Cuomo didn't even win.
I was going to say.
This week and in 2002. He lost to Herman McCall, I believe, who then lost to Pataki.
Who lost to Pataki. So, which is, I guess, you know, why we eventually got him as Attorney General and then Governor later. But done now, I think. Hopefully.
I mean, knock on wood, baby. I'm hoping that he got beat so bad that he's going to go away forever. There was a poll today that he was, when they ran like a, you know, a general election that he was running in, they tied with Zoran. But that was from the pollster that got the last poll 20 points wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, I'm hoping that's enough for him to be like, never mind.
Yeah, don't worry. We got Eric Adams still running.
Eric Adams, who launched his campaign today. And what was the thing he said? He led his supporters in a chant: focus, no distractions, and grind.
Wait, are you joking?
Clayton, I'm not joking.
I'm gonna miss him.
Yeah,
weirdly.
Sorry, I know that I talk about Eric Adams too much on every podcast I'm on, but did you see the video of him on election day? Because, like, you know, his assembly member in the city council is Chiyose, because Eric is registered.
Oh my god, right.
And there was a video of him going into his poll site, and someone behind him yells, you know, "Eric, you voting for Chi?" And he turns to the camera. Chiyose, who is like a gay DSA guy. Adams turns to the camera and just goes, and he gives this like impish little coquettish little smile. And I'm like, I am going to miss this guy. I just, man, I am going to miss him.
None of his governance, but as a character.
No, I think that I was saying to a friend, I think they should give him, they should build the New York from a Synecdoche, New York, and let him be the mayor of it. And we all get like two free visits a year to go to Eric Adams's little pretend play New York and see what he's doing up over there. You see what he's doing over there. Oh, but everybody's an actor. He can't actually hurt anybody.
And I think that's good. I think people actually reminding me people should listen to your mayor podcast to hear more about mayors.
Sure. Yeah. That's good. Let me go long on Eric Adams all the time. Yeah. Over there.
But we could talk about Star Trek now, I guess.
Sure. I've heard of it. Star Trek?
Yeah, Enterprise specifically.
Okay. So, the name of this episode is Oasis. Is the name of this episode?
That's like a thing when you're dying of thirst and you're looking for anything, just something that will improve your lot in life, like on a television show that's had a lot of really bad, boring episodes.
Stinkers. This, I will say, at the top of the episode, there's a lot of little plot machinations that I don't think we need to get fully into every single tiny little twist and turn of this fucking episode, because it is a genre of Star Trek episode that they did a lot of, I'll say, on basically every non-Deep Space Nine current Star Trek. There's a genre of episode that I absolutely cannot stand. And the whole thing is always just, what's really going on this planet? Right? And there's always like, they land on the planet and something's a little weird. And they're like, what's going on? And then it's like, oh, this thing was going on. And they're like, oh, I guess if I had known that at the beginning, the whole episode would have been different, and they get up and leave. And like, that's the episode.
Yeah, that's fair.
But this is a real, what's wrong here, planet.
You're totally right. You're right in the terms of how tropey this is of like a specific Star Trek trope. Yeah,
it's like a bad Voyager episode.
Yeah. I can't think of one off the top of my head, to be honest, but I feel like I don't mind this trope. Mm. It's just, you gotta do it good.
You gotta do it. I mean, really that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing with any kind of genre of episode. Is you gotta do it good. I just feel like often these mystery episodes are just like, the mystery is never that interesting.
And this one specifically has to do some things where like a character explains it, but off camera, and you're like, oh, I guess I just still don't get to know what's going on.
Yeah. Anyways, so this episode starts with Captain Archer is having dinner with an alien trader who I guess they met. He seems interesting. I hope we get
Damar.
Damar.
I like Damar.
I love that motherfucker. He's cool.
They went really hard on his makeup.
It's like a full body thing. He looks cool as hell. He's affable and friendly. He's eating like spicy food that'll like blow your fucking dick off.
Yeah, they're all dying.
He's like, oh yeah, people eat this to like prove their strength.
Cool.
And like, cool, man. I'd love to see more of you in this episode. And he's like, absolutely. Gotta go, but there is a haunted ship nearby if you want to go there.
I also just want to say, this food is spicy acting. Not good. They just didn't do a good job of that.
No. Well, this was before we, as a culture, we had hot ones, so everyone knew what it looked like when someone was eating something spicy. This was back when people were not allowed to eat spicy food. So they actually had no idea what it looked like.
Yeah.
And no one knew what to look for. No one knew that it made you cry. Anyways, he's like, there's a ship, it's crashed, it's got stuff on it, but it is haunted. I spiked on that one real bad.
Well, that sounds good. It's almost like a theremin.
That's a problem for you later. The waveform that I just created is really cool. Okay.
That's good. I like
it. It's been a long way. Getting from there to here. So the episode starts in earnest. The Enterprise is like orbiting the planet. They find the ship and there's no life signs. Interesting. But they got to send an away team. There's no way to get, none of the scans are doing anything. The scanners aren't scanning. Something's wrong. What's wrong on the planet?
It's spooky.
It's spooky like, there. Okay. Yeah. Archer Travis, who's back on the show. Welcome back to the show, Travis, who's been gone for like five episodes.
Is he going to have a big part in this episode?
No. It's Archer, Travis, T'Pol, and Trip all go to the planet. That's the away team. They get to the ship. They open it. And they get there and they're like, that's weird, because if Damar left in a hurry, why is the hand?
Travis noted it. Travis was on point. It's like, yeah, it's just weird that he said he left in a hurry, but also closed the door.
That's so weird. And then Travis, I think, disintegrates into dust and is gone for the rest of the episode. No, because he's kind of there to talk about, like, the thing I like about Travis is that he is interesting as a character because he was born in space and he was raised in space and he's the space boy and he knows about space. And he like has ghost stories about being in space and all the weird stuff you encounter doing long space hauling.
Long hauls, which is what this crew was. It actually really frustrated him here when we got this taste of like, hey, Travis is a character in this episode. He should have been Tripp's role. He would have had a reason to be like, hey, it's weird how small the hydroponics are. We never could have gotten away with that much on our long hauls. Like, he would have known what it's like to be on a ship like this. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would have been a cool, like, character exploration for him.
No.
To talk to people who are stuck on a ship
absolutely
for a long
not.
Time.
No.
Can't have no, that. We got to have another kind of rerun of another Trip plot line. So cool.
Yeah. To the point where T'Pol is like, didn't this happen already?
Yeah, literally. Actually, what's her name again?
Her name is Leon.
The Vulcan. No. The Vulcan. Say her name.
T'Pol.
A reader on our Patreon pointed out.
A writer. A listener.
A listener and supporter. It's T'Pol.
T'Pol. I'm going to continue
and I
to
was
say
like,
T'Pol because it's made up.
We do say T'Pol.
We do.
And on the show, they do say T'Pol.
Is that true?
Now, yeah. Okay. After they pointed this out, I listened hard. I'm like, they're saying T'Pol. And you know what? If you just take like T'Pol. The Paul from T'Pauly or okay. politics, mm-hmm. I guess that is what you'd say. But for some reason, I just read it as, sorry.
T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol.
T'Pol.
T'Pol.
It's T'Pol.
T'Pol. T'Pol. T'Pol. No, here's what, okay, actually, okay. So if you're that person that wrote in, number one, thank you for supporting us on Patreon. TemporalCultureWorld.com for more content. Number two. I'm just going to say it a bunch of times right now, and I want you to mentally clip them and put them into your memories. So I'm just going to say right now, T'Pol. Okay.
We're good now.
At that point in the episode, T'Pol, or as I like to call her, T'Pol, she hears something. What if I just went back? T'Pol says she hears something, but she's like, it's probably just rodents. I don't know. Tucker is like, I found some dilithium, which is basically what we're here for, because like we need dilithium and we need like
some metals
because we've taken a lot of damage on the road more than we thought. But then T'Pol thinks she sees someone in a reflection somewhere.
It's creepy.
And then Tucker sees a shadow. And it's very like horror movie stuff. But like, what if it was filmed in a way that was boring?
We got that one other Travis scene where he also, again, is intelligent and points out the fact that this place hasn't already been stripped bare. Like, he found it, but why wouldn't somebody else? It's just pointing out the mystery.
They blast through a hole, a hatch of some sort. And they find...
Oh, to find the shadow.
Find the shadow. And they see that there's been a dampening field. Hiding a bunch of vegetables and plants and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they find a bunch of real people, like a colony of people.
Yeah, they find a blonde lady first.
They find a blonde woman.
And then after chasing her, they find a bunch of people.
They find a lot of
including
people.
Our pal Odo.
They find René Auberjonois himself, my man. Odo, when I was looking up this episode before we started it, like to see what episode was next, mm-hmm. the little preview image is René Auberjonois, the late, great René Auberjonois, the beating heart of Deep Space Nine, my man, Odo. I love him as an actor so much. He's also a very talented voice actor. He's the chef in The Little Mermaid. but nothing to do here in this episode. Anyways, they're all...
He kind of gets like a monologue at the end that's like, you know, he has chops, but...
Yeah, I think he like also like taught acting and stuff. He's cool. Yeah. So the aliens are called Kentaris or something.
Kentarabara, that's their planet or something.
Yeah, anyways, they're humans, but they've got three little dots on their temples.
Yeah, it's nothing much.
At one point during the episode, I was looking down doing something and I looked up. and I saw them and I was like, oh, they're human. That's interesting. No, no, not at all. Anyways, they were like, we were long hauling. We got shot down by somebody. We don't know who. We crash landed. We've been surviving since. It's been 3 years.
And the dampening field is so the Raiders don't find
us. The dampening field is so Raiders don't find them, but also that means we can't send any distress calls. Which, couldn't you put a distress signal outside of the... Anyways,
it's fine. Yeah, it's fair that here, but their explanation doesn't track.
No.
And I feel like...
That's on purpose.
It's on purpose, yeah. But as the audience, you should be thinking it's a little odd, and luckily... Yeah. The characters do. Like, it would have been really frustrating if the characters didn't point out how flimsy of an explanation that was. But
yeah. Anyways, they're like, you know, Archer's like, we want to help. Tucker's like, I think I can fix the ship. And everybody over there, all the Kentaurians or whatever, are like, no, we tried. We tried to fix it. It's unfixable, actually. But Tucker is like, I'm going to go fix it. And he starts flirting with Leanna, Odo's daughter. And then, like, her parents are like, do not hang out with this guy. Or like her mother specifically is like, get away from that man.
She also is like a little odd. Like at first she's just not talking at all. And then she's just like very curious.
Yeah.
But
no, it's like she's a weirdo. She acts like she's like homeschooled or something.
That's a good approximation.
Yeah. I think actually like this is a, not an incredible actor or performance, but I think gets at the sort of like this person would be this weird.
Yeah.
For reasons we'll find out that are so interesting.
Mystery.
Mystery. What's wrong on this planet, Clayton? We'll never know. It's Paul is like, hey, last time you flirted with somebody, you did get pregnant, dude.
I appreciated the callback to that because they were retreading on such similar ground.
But they start arguing like they're boyfriend, girlfriend, don't they?
Yeah.
I got a weird vibe.
It's definitely that, or like, I'm trying to remember, you know, I think we've spoiled this already, but these two are going to become somewhat of a relationship,
yeah,
as much as Star Trek allows. But I was like, I feel like that's pretty late in the series, so I don't even know if they're foreshadowing.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing here, but they're arguing, like, she likes him, and it's just like, a Vulcan would not be behaving, a Vulcan whose name is T'Pol would not be arguing, would not be behaving like this.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. Leanna comes back. And feeds Tucker, and he's like, I love food. The dude loves food.
It's a Lorella, I think is what she said, and it looks like a green gourd filled with cubes of avocado. I just take note of any time there's, like, alien food on these shows, because I'm curious what the, like...
Yeah.
The set design people cooked up for it, literally.
Yeah. Tucker and T'Pol have to go back to the ship for something. They, like, had some problem with their computer or something. I wasn't quite clear on it, but I was like, we are back at the ship. And Leanna, the girly, is like, can I go? And Renee Auberjonois is like, no. She's like, come on. He's like, okay. Great.
They also ask him to fix something else.
Yeah, they're fixing the computer core, I believe, is what they're doing to go get parts for it. So they go back to the ship.
Oh, I guess, it's hard to note any thoughtful writing here. But once again, he mentions like, oh yeah, this computer core kind of reminds me of the Zorellian, so I think I could fix it. Which is technically foreshadowing something that we're going to find out about their computer core later, but it's another small thing. That's
fine.
it's something.
They get to the ship. Back there, Malcolm and Travis are like, this story's crazy. That like little oasis they've built is not big enough for the whole colony. But Archer's like, we'll figure it out. We'll take a look. Something's wrong on this planet.
Yeah, the damage on their ship doesn't track. They're not, why wouldn't they? Also, this is where they finally point out, like, why wouldn't they send a distress signal out after 3 years? It's weird.
Yeah. Tucker is like hanging out with Leanna. They're flirting some more. And he's like, hey, tell me about your home planet. And she's like, I don't want to talk about that. Where have you been? Archer is like, Tucker, I need you. So she goes off on a tour with somebody else, like just some rando, I think. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, are there. Captain Archer and Malcolm are like, we have the real reason that they crashed. It was not an attack. It was a malfunction. It was an accident. And they've been crashed for 22 years.
Dun, dun, dun.
And they also found escape pods, one of which... is in orbit, And then they get the fucking escape pod and they crack it open and there is a corpse inside of a guy you have met. A guy that is not Rene Bergeron-Wall, but another one of the guys.
I didn't recognize him.
I did not recognize him either, but it was just like,
oh.
Well, and then immediately you're like, oh, ghosts! That's cool.
Yeah, I'll admit, this was the point, the high point maybe for the episode and my investment of like, okay, I'm actually a little intrigued by the mystery here. And I was hoping, because I completely forgot what this boring ass episode was about. Mm-hmm. I was hoping they were just going to do a straight up, like, somehow there are ghosts on this book. Ghosts are real.
Yeah, or like there's like a, listen, I feel like this show is done, not like this show, but Star Trek has done ghosts.
Yeah.
Like there could be energies. This fucking...
What's like the horny ghost?
Two episodes ago was the poems ghost.
Oh, yeah. There was like the famous horny ghost on Star Trek Next Generation.
Q? No.
Yeah, Q.
The horny ghost.
It was like stuck in a book or something. Oh. Or I Irish family. So I can't remember the...
I don't remember that at all.
But yeah, there could have been something interesting to this. But no.
And yet.
It's a retread of a plot that's happened quite a few times, yeah. Specifically on Star Trek.
You know, Tucker confronts his girlie, and he's like, hey, why'd you crash 20 years ago? That means you've never been to the planet. You were born on that planet, weren't you? And she's like, bring me home, please. Bring me home, please. Does not let him do much accusing at her.
She really doesn't like talking about the dead guy.
She does not want to talk about it. You know... The whole team goes back. Sorry, Archer and Malcolm go there. But then they're like, the colonists are like, go home. Get out of here. So just
because they've taken T'Pol and Archer's like, give her back. And they're like, not until Trip fixes the repairs.
That's right. That's right. I forgot why.
Of the computer specifically. Of the computer and I'm gonna be, this is when I'm like, it's a holographic computer. Like it was important. Like 3 minutes of me being like kind of intrigued by the mystery. And then after this, I'm like, oh, it's a holographic.
Yeah. The ghost lives in the computer.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I mean, like right after that, Liana's like, everybody's a hologram, by the way.
They have this scene with her mom where she's like, you're not like me. I'm not like you. Yeah. And I was like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause then you're not like a hologram. You're not a hologram.
But they're still trying to hide what's happening. It's dumb.
It's stupid. Anyways. You know, there's like a big scuffle. Everyone comes back to like rescue, T'Pol and Trip. And Reed gets shot, but then he tries to shoot a colonist and it goes through them.
Oh, ooh,
like a hologram.
Oh, right.
That's right.
Oh, wait. Whoop. It shouldn't go through a hologram, right? Like the holograms in this are holding guns. It's the like physical kind of hologram that Star Trek does. So
I think you're right.
I don't
know. Wait.
They also go through walls. So it's like,
well,
maybe this aliens have different hologram technology. Maybe the holograms are different because they're aliens.
Maybe the magic is broken and they fix the magic with different magic. Yeah. The Star Trek special. Or
like at the same time as this fight, Trip is in the computer core with Leona.
Yanking out circuits.
Well, at first she's like, okay, I'm going to tell you, you ever believed in a lie for so long that you believe the lie is real? And then
the one interesting thing in the episode.
Yeah. Let me tell you what's going on. Cut to the fight. So again, they want to drag this mystery. You've obviously figured out a little longer. And then, the scene where they're ripping out chips from the computer and the holograms start just disappearing.
Everybody disappears. Guns,
like, fall to the ground one by one.
Leaving only Liana and Odo, whose name is... Ezreal.
I never got Odo's name. I just kept
Never got it either. I'm looking at the Wikipedia here. His name was Ezreal.
Ezreal.
Okay. Whatever. Ezreal is like, okay, here's what happened. By the way, and he just like lays out everything that happened. And he's like, there's like one of the stupid little storms that breaks the ships all the time on Star Trek. They crash landed. I feel bad because I'm the engineer and I left my station while we were crashing to save my daughter's life. And she's like, it's my fault. And then everybody else on the ship dies because he was being negligent. And then he's like, of course, what I'll do here is use my genius at computers to reconstruct my whole, he's like, everyone on the ship is like family to me or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I reconstructed her mother, so she wouldn't be alone. And then I reconstructed my friend, the guy that you saw in the escape pod. And then I reconstructed everybody else. And it's like, what? You're like a genius at computers. And you could build whole people with personalities, with exact replicas of their personalities from your memories. That's how good you are at computers and being smart. And you couldn't rig up a fucking signal.
You couldn't handle a little plasma leak.
You couldn't send a distress signal.
Yeah.
What? Are you just like that ashamed? Now you've doomed your daughter to live in a weird little cage? You fucking freakazoid?
What is it? 2 years he tried to fix the ship and it just wasn't possible. And then it was like, all right, I give up. I guess I'll make fake people for my daughter to live with.
Yeah, I mean, this is a lot like the plot of Castaway, is that he spends a little while trying to fix the plane. And then, of course, he makes the volleyball. just a whole planet of Wilsons. It's Wilson Planet, Clayton. Forget it.
It's Wilson Planet. I mean, I'd love to see Odo in the place of Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
But being Odo stuck on an island.
That'd be great.
As much as it's annoying that this is just like an info dump of what happened.
Yeah.
He does have gravitas. He does like show that he's tortured by what he did. He feels to blame.
Yeah.
And he even has another scene after this, after they basically like, we're not done with the scene. There's a bit more to it.
Yeah, he's like, and then Tucker's like, I'll fix the holograms. But this girly doesn't deserve to be trapped here forever with you because you're a maniac.
Yeah, he has a good, Trip has a good line where he's like, well, what about what your daughter needs? What if, what happens when you die?
What happens when you die? Do you have to like to build yourself?
You know, he says, what are you going to do? Program a holographic doctor? Hi-yo.
Hey-yo.
That's a joke for Star Trek fans. That's
stupid. I forgot about that. I think I pushed that in my brain. Anyways, Ezreal is like, bring me the parts. I'll fix the ship and we'll go on our merry way somewhere else to this planet.
He gets another chance to flex his acting by like having a mea culpa. Because in this scene, he's like, no, I don't want to. It's just help us fix the holograms.
Yeah.
And we'll be fine. But then he goes to Archer later and is like, yeah, you have a cool ship. And, you know, I've been so used to this. Like, I just didn't want to leave. I was comfortable here. I didn't like the idea of changing things.
Yeah.
But that trip has convinced me we should try to go home.
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, he shows his like discomfort and he's just talking about how he feels. And he's a good actor. So it's not bad. But it's like, again, this tiny little highlight in this otherwise extraordinarily boring episode.
And then they bring back all of the supplies, and then Tucker gives the girl a kissy.
And an ice cream machine.
Mm-hmm. And an ice cream machine. Oh, yeah, because she liked ice cream when she was on the show.
She liked ice cream. Yeah, I guess that was a plot point.
Because they had nothing. God, a real piece of shit episode that sucked, did nothing, and contributed nothing to my life, and I hate it.
Haven't they literally done an episode where there are people living amongst holograms? Like, isn't that literally a Next Generation episode? Like, a whole planet where everybody's a hologram except, like, one person?
I believe so. People can't stop doing this shit.
Yeah.
People love it.
If you're going to do that, it's okay. Like, it's a big world. That could happen again. But do something with the conceit. There's nothing interesting about the conceit here.
Nope.
And, like, now we've already got two episodes about holograms. I guess the other one wasn't as big about holograms. But two episodes where it's like, hey, we're low-tech Star Trek. We're early Star Trek. We don't have technology like this. But we're still going to find ways to make episodes about the tech.
No, there's something about this. I guess it is not just a Star Trek problem. It is a problem I have largely with a sort of, I always call them like smug mysteries, where it's like a lot of mystery functions this way, where it's just kind of like, well, you don't know this because I haven't told you. And then you tell me and then the mystery's over. And it's like, well, this isn't fun for anybody. Like you haven't made the journey interesting enough. Like the whole thing, why a mystery is interesting is because of the people doing it and what happens along the way. Because if you just don't do much with it, what you have is, well, I'm telling you a story and I haven't told you one thing, and then I wait and then I tell you it. And it's like, well, what have you done? What have you
done? Yeah.
It's like, you didn't tell me, you piece of shit.
And like, going back to that Travis idea, if there had been something like tension,
yes,
where Travis is noticing these things because he's really into like what it takes to live on a ship,
or
like this
something
long haul
that happened on the ship he grew up on, that was a ghost thing that he's relating, that like it really keeps lining up with, or
what he knows,
something.
There's something there to make this interesting and different. Even within, like, this feels like a generic episode of Enterprise already.
Yeah.
Like, they've kind of already done this episode of Enterprise a bit, but also it's another Star Trek generally redo. And then it's also this trope of the easy or the smug mystery, which is just wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. Awful.
What a waste of Renee.
What a waste of my friend Renee. I hope he comes back. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Well,
that's another episode.
That's another episode of this fucking thing. This fucking thing being the show Enterprise, not our beautiful show that I love.
No, no, of course not.
Not the beautiful time.
Which,
I have speaking to you.
To remind you, you can listen to us get more entertainingly frustrated at an episode of TV.
God.
Like, on the bonus.
I don't think I've ever been as mad. Like recently, I don't think I've been as mad as I got that episode.
It was incredible.
I could just see the 21st century laid out in front of me.
It was actually frighteningly predictive of some things, which is great for an October 3rd, 2001 episode of television.
But not predictive in a way that it thought it was being.
Yeah, exactly. So we're on Patreon. $1 or $2 helps us cover hosting fees and streaming and stuff. So we appreciate it.
Tim.
And that's also where you can pay to message us about how we mispronounce character names.
Yeah. temporalculturewar.com. You could also, a little thingy, just for me, is I have a book coming out very soon. I'm going on a little teeny tiny book tour. I think right now it's a couple of cities, New York, Boston, Philly, Chicago, Minneapolis. And I think I'm forgetting a place, but I'll never remember it. Anyways, I'm going those places. You can go to MattyLobchansky.com/tour if you'd like to pre-order a book at one of those spots and come see me out on the road, because I got to put butts in those seats, baby.
I'm excited.
I'm
excited for my pre-order tour.
Wow.
Could order from a bookstore.
You could also order from any bookstore.
And for Maddie.
If you go to simplicitybook.xyz, you can pre-order the book from your local bookstore. I love custom domains. I love to make
them. I do, too.
That's all I've got.
For Temporal Culture War, this has been Clayton Ashley.
And this has and will be later Maddie Lipchinsky. And as always,
let's
go.
Perfect.